Welcome to a bonus episode of the Identipod. I'm your host, Casey Grove. We are a production of Alaska Public Media. Coming up, we've got an interview with Dallas Seavey, the four-time Iditarod champion, who has really gone through quite a bit in the last few years. He has gone through a divorce. He moved his kennel to Talkeetna from Willow and, of course, was at the center of some accusations of dog doping back in 2017. The story goes a couple dogs on his team tested positive for tramadol, a pain-relieving medication that is not allowed in Iditarod dogs during the race. And it sort of took a little while for that information to come out and a lot of people asking questions. There was quite a bit of criticism of the Iditarod board, and since then have been some pretty major leadership changes. In the meantime, Dallas had taken his sled dogs over to Norway and had been racing in the Finnmark Sloppet over there and had just, I think, last year come back and done some commentary for the Iditarod, so sort of coming back in. And you'll hear in this interview with Alaska Public Media's Tegan Hanlon, Dallas talks about how valuable taking that time off was for him. He has this insight. He's still a relatively young guy, but he has this insight of somebody that's been racing in the Iditarod for a long time, because he has, of sort of knowing that what he needs to be happy is to maybe not be going every year trying to win the Iditarod. He says at one point that maybe he's sort of contemplating maybe he would run 4 out of every 5 Iditarod races. So sort of planning on taking some time off in the future, but this is like his first year coming back and definitely a serious contender and trying to win the race. But I would say, you know, this is a 30-plus minute interview, and he definitely gets very philosophical about why he wants to mush dogs and why it's important to him and when it's actually fun for him and how when it's fun for him, it's fun for the dogs, and they all seem to do better when it is something that they can really put their full motivation behind, I guess, and not be too distracted by other things. And certainly some different things in the recent years have been distractions to him. He also talks quite a bit about what sounds like some sort of hard feelings still for race management in the past. And again, that some of that has changed. And he says that he never really held it against the Iditarod itself, the race that he loves, that he's been doing for such a big part of his life. And of course, the son of Mitch Seavey, the grandson of Dan Seavey, and so has been a part of this Iditarod mushing family, so such a huge part of his life, that whole larger Iditarod family is not who he's talking about. It's more of the management and some of the poor decisions that he thought were made in the past that had affected him and perhaps besmirched his reputation. And of course, there's a whole lot more than that, and you'll just have to listen to the interview to hear what Dallas has to say. And if you want to just skip past all the serious stuff, just straight to the dogs, there's a big chunk at the end of this interview where he's just walking through the dog lot, introducing Tegan to dogs. There's a lot of barking, so that's an option too. Anyway, so here is Alaska Public Media's Tegan Hanlon interviewing four-time Iditarod champion Dallas Seavey after a hiatus of several years and a whole bunch of other things. Here's Tegan in Dallas.
All right, I'm going to test the sound, but yeah, can you talk about who's behind us?
All right, we got about 110 sled dogs behind us. this is, I guess, our purpose for the time being. When I say our, it's myself, and I think I have 5 people that live on site here with the cabins that we have over here. And I got another 2 or 3 that commute here on a daily basis to help us take care of dogs. So all of us are focused on these dogs, these 110, and that number varies a little bit. I've got 6 here right now that are actually sold, but due to COVID have not been able to be picked up for some time. And in that time, we've had a few litters of puppies as well, so the numbers always fluctuate a little bit. And this is my new kennel. I moved up here. I began the move in 2017. And I guess it's final in that we're all here now, but it's not final in that we still have a lot of development left to go.
Fair. Well, I guess, Dallas, to like pivot, it all sounds good to pivot to the Iditarod. Can you talk about, you've been gone the past few years, why come back in 2021?
Yeah. So my last Iditarod was 2017, I guess. You know, it's it's busy life, first of all. Even in 2017, I was ready to take a year off, to be honest. I was starting to think very seriously that someday soon I would need to take a break, and that was one of the promises I made myself when I got into this, having grown up in it and seeing the vortex that is the Iditarod, is that if it's ever not the most exciting thing I can think of to do, I'm going to take a year off. There's nothing wrong with that. 2017 gave me more than a few reasons, mostly that, you know, we had our team was, I want to say, charged with having a positive test that was terribly mismanaged by the race at that time, in my opinion, obviously. And that led to some pretty intense back and forth between the Iditarod and I. And I hate to say Iditarod because I have never had a problem with the Iditarod. I love the Iditarod beyond all sporting events for sure, and obviously I've made it my life. But I felt there was certain leadership within the race that was something that I couldn't condone, and I felt that by racing I was condoning that. Now, since that time, the Iditarod is fully kind of acquitted, I guess would be the right word, as of all possible wrongdoing. Had a nice apology and all that good stuff as well. And I think the Iditarod and I are on great terms. And to be clear, again, I have always loved the Iditarod. There was just aspects within it that I felt were letting the other aspects down. Anyway, so that was a great opportunity to kind of pivot a little bit, and I got to go race in Norway for 2 years. I was over there in 2018 and 19, racing the longest race in Europe. And that was really fun because I kind of needed a break from the Iditarod, but I wasn't in a place that I wanted to not be racing dogs competitively. And then last year, I took the year off entirely. You know, I've had a lot going on, moving here, obviously. Get divorced, that takes some time and energy. And so it's just like, I've always loved mushing. I've always felt like this is what I'm supposed to be doing, and I've always done well at it when I felt like this is what I should be doing. But as soon as you're mushing and feeling like I should be doing something else, or that you have your energy split, it's really hard to put the focus on the race that you need to have success. So I felt the healthiest thing for me to do is take a year off, regroup, you know, trying to get out of, you know, the constant pressure of trying to come up with the funds to do the race, try to get a year ahead rather than always being a year behind. And so that was great to take that year off last year. I was still involved with the race, did a lot of commentary for the Iditarod. And now it's time to be back, I guess. I'm excited to do this race. I'm not going to say that, oh yeah, I'm going to go and race every year race for the next 10 years. I really enjoyed taking a year off. And I'm probably going to do it again many times. If I'm going to do this until I'm, you know, like my dad at 60-something years old, who finished second in last year's Iditarod, if I'm going to do this until that point in my life, which I may or may not, the healthy way to do that is take some breaks. You don't have to hit everyone. I think I would be better if I did every, you know, 4 out of 5, let's say. I think I would have more successful races than feeling like it's a grind. That's not the point. None of us are doing this because it needs to be done. We're doing it because we enjoy it. The dogs enjoy it. I enjoy it. And the dogs and I both enjoy it more if we're all in the right frame of mind when it comes time. So, yeah, this year's time to be back. I have a lot of dogs from my dad's kennel because he is not racing this year. And I think that was one factor, probably, to me racing this year, is that he wanted to take a year off. And it's just a good timing. You know, we've got great dogs between us. We've never really cooperated before, certainly not in the Iditarod. In fact, we were kind of bitter rivals. So now it makes sense. He wants to take a year off, and I think he's able to do that, knowing that his dogs are still able to run and do what they were bred to do and be successful at what they are, and that is an incredible endurance athlete. So it kind of made it easier for him to take a year off. His year off may become permanent, maybe not, I don't know yet. And I don't think he knows yet. So anyway, it's the right time to be back. I'm excited to be back in the Iditarod. I'm excited about kind of the changes the Iditarod has made. I think that some of them were past due. And despite all the other issues that we face, you know, everything from COVID to, you know, pressure from some animal rights organizations that have kind of been a pain for the Iditarod, I really think the Iditarod is in a stronger place now because I think we have better leadership, and I think that's what's going to help move forward in this situation, help explain what the Iditarod is. Most of the kind of hostilities towards the Iditarod are either blatantly false, or on the whole, most commonly, it's just a lack of information. People don't understand, they don't know, so we need to do a better job of helping to explain what it is that we do and what the Iditarod is about.
Can you talk about like what role the Iditarod plays, and when you think about like the landscape of racing, right? Like, why come back to the Iditarod? It's sure, it's convenient, it's in Alaska, but like, you know, you could just keep racing in Norway, or you could, if the quest becomes 1,000 miles again, you could become a quest musher. Like, why the Iditarod? What sort of place does it hold for you? What's that like? You know, why do you want to do this race?
Sure, the Iditarod is the big one. I don't think anybody would really make an honest challenge against that. When it comes to long distance racing, the Iditarod is the world championships. For me, as a musher, where I find joy in mushing is trying to become better at it. And for it to be challenging and tough for me, I need to be racing competitively. And I guess the reason I clarify that is because the Iditarod is an equally big challenge for somebody who is just trying to finish it. Or mushing can be just as rewarding for somebody who has no interest in racing whatsoever. So they just want to have a recreational team. But for me, for mushing to be challenging and rewarding and feel like I'm having to become a bigger, better person to be able to keep advancing in it, I've got to be racing. And the Iditarod is where you go to see if you're doing a good job of that or not. You will get tested by the best competitors in the world. And that's why I'm at the Iditarod. Iditarod holds a very special place in my heart. Growing up with it, obviously my grandpa ran the first ever Iditarod long before I was ever even thought of. My dad has raced, I don't know, 25 Iditarods now, I'm guessing, but I think that's a good guess. My life has been focused around the Iditarod since I was literally 5 or 6 years old. You know, that was the year started and ended with the Iditarod. Our, you know, fiscal year did, at least. That's where all our energies were focused. So in a way, it's coming home for me. Right, this is where I belong, racing the Iditarod. I enjoy doing these other races. I will go back to Norway and do that one again, I am sure. But Iditarod's, it is the big one. It's the big one, and it's what I kind of, when I envision ultra-competitive, ultra-long-distance racing, that's Iditarod.
And just to go back to, like, 2017 for a minute, and I guess I alluded to it down there, but so you were thinking about taking a break. And then other factors, you know, specifically your dogs were charged. You were charged with mm-hmm. giving your dogs, Tramadol, which dogs can take, but not in the race. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about just like to what degree, if at all that, I mean, I don't know if at all is even fair, to what degree it changed like your life as a human, as a musher, like, I don't know, reflecting, you know, now 4 years ago, like how did that change the trajectory you thought you were going on?
Yeah, no, I mean, man, it's funny when you bring this up, because it's like something that, it's one of those issues that you deal with and you just hope to never even have to mess with this crap again, basically. And so I think you spend a lot of your time just not even going back to that place, if you will. That was some tough years, like some really honestly brutally tough years. I like to think that I'm a pretty tough dude when it comes to, you know, go back to wrestling. I think that's where a lot of it started. Growing up in a family that this is what we do, we run 1,000-mile races, to finding that I had a niche in the Iditarod. I was good at it, right? And like for me, as I was growing and becoming an adult and doing this and making this my own career, not something my dad did, is really realizing, yeah, I'm actually pretty good at this. Like I can still make decisions. These things that are affecting my competitors don't bother me, or not in the same way. So I felt like I was kind of on a roll there, and felt like I was, you know, like I said, kind of a tough person. But this was an entirely different kind of tough that just bashes you over the head. You know, here I am camping with my daughter in the spring, out mushing with dogs, camping, and I get the phone call, right? Hey, your dog's had this positive test from Mark Nordman. And just the instant, like, sinking feeling, like, how? What is Tramadol? I had never even heard of this thing prior to that. And that set off, literally, I would say, without a doubt, the most stressful year of my life, filled with more challenges than at times I thought I was capable of handling, right? And it was a different type of challenge. I think we all get good at handling challenges that we see regularly. You know, if you're a triathlete, you're good at being miserable. You're good at, you learn how to cope with that form of suffering. And I think all of us in different ways have things that you suffer through, and we learn methods to cope with that. This was a whole new realm for me. At the same time, kind of the beginning of, you know, separation and divorce and all that. So add that on top of it. And then a real sense of betrayal, honestly. People that I felt were friends, or people that I had even looked up to when I had been growing up racing, that were now in positions with the race that there was no truth behind what was going on. It was political. You know, I had been making a lot of stink about the race in other regards, some rule changes that were very questionable, and I had become kind of the talking head, if you will, kind of for the mushers, and a lot of topics that were kind of, we wanted to see change within the race from the musher standpoint, and I was kind of the conduit that ran through. And so it was not pleasant. And then what really irked me was the no method to resolve it. There was no method. I could not get a response from the race unless I went to the media, and then that would elicit and force a response from the race, and that was our method of communication. And it really pained me in two ways. One, that they didn't want to know what happened. They didn't want to resolve it. They wanted to make accusations that they could not prove, that they had no intention of proving, and just let it lie. And it also, so it irked me from that perspective for sure. But trying to pick up my train of thought there. The other side of it, I guess, is just that there was, it's just, this whole thing was just such a mess. Where it was just a complete cluster, right? Everything was just a mess. And again, I felt like everything that I was kind of getting attacked. You know, all the success we had, and I mean, I just went through 4 or 5 of the toughest years of my life, and thinking like, I can't, they're asking me to prove that you didn't do something, which is literally impossible, or trying to prove a negative here. So there was no way to resolve anything. They had no interest in looking at truth. I felt like we had a pretty clear method of proving that there was no way that we were involved with this, and there was no interest in seeing that. And so that led into this a whole big fiasco. And I really did feel like everything that was important to me, you know, namely my integrity, the fact that we had, you know, trained and developed the best dogs in the world. I felt like what those dogs had accomplished was being undermined and kind of taken away from them. And again, in very backhanded kind of innuendo suggestion, they wouldn't actually make a charge because they couldn't prove anything. And they knew that. Somewhere in that process, you know, I made the decision that, you know, I'm going to hit this the same way we do on everything. They tried to make it options to where we could just kind of have it go away and my name would never really be released. And said, screw that. You know, we got truth on our side and we're going to push it to the hilt and see what happens. And at least at the end of it all, I remember this clearly, thinking that maybe nobody will believe us at all, but at least I will know that I didn't roll over on this thing. And we fought this and we fought for what we know to be true. And, you know, now years later, in hindsight, those are the best decisions we could have made. Even at the time, it looked like you were basically throwing yourself in front of a bus, which is kind of what it was. But here we are years later. The organization has changed. I'm still here. We have, I think, people that volunteer their time as board members that are there for the right reasons. They want to see the race succeed. They have the right skill sets. I don't think there are any ulterior motives. We have other leadership and kind of the staff level of the race that I think is doing a great job. And again, has new energy and new ideas. And I think it is really a kind of a brighter horizon for the race looking forward. And so I'm excited about that. And I think my other big, I don't want to say fear, but I can admit to being human. you know, is in all of this, one of the things that I think was a turning point for me on a psychological level in all this was, you know, everything from being accused of, you know, doping your dogs, which, think about it, what's the worst thing that can happen to an athlete? You know, it's probably, you know, I would say is positive drug tests, right? You're doping. But it's even worse if it's your dogs, right? It's one thing to do it to yourself. It's, you know, and people, I think, can sometimes understand that almost, like, okay, they really wanted to win. But when it's your dogs, something that you're in charge of, something that you're supposed to care for, this is like child abuse level, right? So that really bothered me. And then also, I guess, you know, the fact that the whole integrity thing and everything else, and it really irked me. And I felt like, oh, I guess the other thing I was going to say is then at the same time, we get the people jumping on the bandwagon with literally making, you know, animal abuse claims, having, you know, animal control come out here. Of course, there was no false whatsoever. They come out here said, yeah, everything's hunky-dory. We're one of the few kennels that have every possible license and have regular kennel checks and everything else. So all these things coming down, and I guess at some point it felt like everything that I thought that I was, you know, peripherally, externally being torn apart. And I guess the realization and all of that was, I am whatever's left. Once people get done taking away whatever they can, if they can take it away, then it's not truly me. And there was definitely a sense of peace. And I will be honest with you, since that whole experience, I care so much less on both sides. When people are really encouraging and whatnot, it seems somewhat hollow. And then there's negative. It also seems equally hollow because so many people seems like are talking for the sake of hearing themselves speak. Anyway, so it was definitely a challenging time. It was definitely a lot of strife. You add to that, you know, like I said, everything else going on in life. But I think that's all behind me. And I can honestly look back. I can look back and honestly say and feel that we handled it to the best of our ability. You know, there's no place that we took a shortcut. There's no place that, you know, there's some shady backroom deal where, oh, you don't release my name and I won't point out the fact that this is blatant. You know, we never took the bait. We never did that. We hit it head on and we handled it just like we handled the races. You know what? Do what is you truthfully see, one step at a time, handle the next thing. You don't have to see where this course takes you. You just have to take one ethical kind of integrity-filled step at a time. And if you do that, you got to have faith that your path will end up in a decent spot. And I feel like looking back, I can be very proud of how it was handled. I feel like I grew as a person through it all, definitely became more resilient. And what was one of the darkest times in my life, I would have to say, is one of the things I'm most proud of now. And nobody knows the whole ins and outs, but I do. And I can be proud of how that went down. And I feel like that was a bigger accomplishment for me than winning any race, was dealing with that whole not to put it too poetically.
Fair. And now it feels like, if I'm understanding correctly, like now it feels like the race, you know, released their, I forget when it was, you know, released their statement eventually saying cleared of wrongdoing. You feel like there's been enough organizational changes that it's like, you still like racing. You still obviously like dogs. There's a lot of them behind you. Yeah. Time to come back.
Yeah. No, I think that's a fair summary. The individuals that I had real issue with, that I felt were the main problems, have all gone. You know, and they may be great people. I don't want to judge too much, but in that capacity, in that moment, in that time, I wasn't real pleased with them. So yeah, I feel like it's all behind us in a way. And it's another page in the book. It's another chapter that we've dealt with. And, the race, I still love the race. I always loved the race. And I felt like that was one of the things that did bother me, is I felt that they were hiding behind the race. And I felt that the only way to get to the real cancer within was through something that I really loved. And I hated the feeling of like attacking the Iditarod. And every article, I felt like they got it wrong, and that, you know, Dallas is attacking the Iditarod or saying this about the Iditarod. No, it's not the Iditarod. The Iditarod is greater than these individuals. These individuals are the problem. The Iditarod is the fans, it's the sponsors, it's the mushers, it's the villages, it's the history, it's the dogs. I am not attacking any of that. That's what I am trying to protect. That is what I want to still be here in 20 years and be here in a healthy way. And I felt that some of the people we were trying to have a direct conversation with were using that as a veil. And that made it really challenging for me to try to, you know, extract, you know, or get a good conversation, or, you know, direct our energy towards that aspect and be clear that it wasn't the whole. So I've never had a problem with the Iditarod. Sure. On the whole.
That makes sense. And then, like, last question, I don't want to dwell on it, just to be clear, I mean, like, I think the last time we talked about it was probably 2017 or maybe 2018. I have like a clear vision of being in a room with Campion. Yeah. And you, and I mean, is it at this point, is like your stance like, I did not do it, I don't know who did?
Yeah.
And I like, is also the third stool, like, I don't know if the test results were accurate, or is that, or is it just, I don't know who did it and I don't know. I don't know. What do you, how like, do you summarize your, again, like, don't want to live in 2017 forever, but.
No. Thank God, no. 2021 is way better.
That's saying something. Yeah.
I have theories. I have suspicions. I do not have proof. And I can be aware enough to realize that what really irked me is I'm getting attacked with a charge that there is zero proof whatsoever that we were in any way involved with. And now, just because that accusation was made, you have 100% obligation to prove it false. So I am and have no interest whatsoever in airing any of my suspicions. I do have a hope, and I don't think it's an unrealistic hope, that someday we will know. It might be 5 years, but every once in a while things come up. I hear things, there's things in passing, and I think there's still a chance that someday we will know what happened. But I don't know, and certainly can't prove anything. And until that time, I have no interest in, you know, in looking at them as any more than theories, and certainly not sharing.
Sure. Fair. But anyway, but here we are, 2021 February. Can you, there's a dog sniffing my leg. Can you talk about just like, when you were talking about how this is like a test of how you've done all year, I was thinking about Ali Zirkle, which was the last story we wrote, and she, right, she's like, I don't want to race the Iditarod and not give the 100%. I'm not here to camp. I'm here to win. What are your goals for 2021? Are you here to try to win? Are you, what are you thinking about?
Yeah, we're here to race. We're definitely here to race. It's so tough. You know, 1 year I counted up, and I think I counted 17 mushers that said absolutely they were going to win the race, right? And I'm not a math expert, but I'm pretty sure that's an impossibility. So we're here to race. I have been fortunate enough to win this thing 4 times before. We have seen the types of teams that are capable of winning. And I've won with some of those teams, perhaps not all of those teams. We have seen teams that perhaps were the best team that we didn't win with, right? So it's so hard to say right now. This is a team that is good enough to win. That doesn't mean we're going to win. It doesn't mean we're going to have a good race. It just means that we're lining up at the starting line with a chance. Probably a better chance than some, maybe not as good of a chance as everybody. But that's all we can really do as a coach, right? When you're in a sport like this where you train all year and you have one shot at it, all you can do is give the team the opportunity to win, not just at the starting line, but at every phase of the race. So during the race, we're going to have curveballs. There will be a moment in this race where it seems like everything has gone wrong, and there is no possible way that we can win, and it is my job to find a way that we can. And it may be a tall order, but if I give that opportunity to the dogs, and if they really excel, then they might just pull it off for me. So yeah, I'm here to race. It's been, we try to have a great race every year, maybe not a win, but a great race every year. And I think as of 2017, I think I had tied the record maybe for the most consecutive top five finishes, certainly in modern history. I think Susan Butcher is maybe the only other one that hit 7 in a row. In modern history, anything over 3 is pretty remarkable for a top five finish. And so I think that we definitely have the ability to be in that range. And I don't want to just barely make top five, but I want to be top five and at some point, if not at many points, have an opportunity to win it. You know, set the team up, take the risks necessary to give them a shot to win. And yeah, so we're here to race. We're definitely not camping. But that can all change, and two good mistakes, and you'll be happy to finish this thing. So.
And I guess, like, one question to just, like, get a little cerebral for one more moment is, like, how would you, like, is there, everyone grows, everyone gets older, like, Dallas returning to the Iditarod 2021 versus Dallas as a musher in 2017, like, is your perspective different? Is your, are you, like, do you feel, like, is it, is this, like, I don't know, like, is this a more... Is this a Dallas that's tuning everyone else out? But I don't know, maybe you kind of did that before. Like, is there, I don't know, maybe there's not. Like, is there anything that feels different about how you're approaching the race this year after you've had time to step away and haven't just been in this routine of, like, all-consuming preparation for a year?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are on a couple different levels. I think to hit first what you're talking about, from a more, to use your word, cerebral standpoint. Yeah, I'm older than I was then, and I would hope that I'm different. Otherwise, I don't seem to be making much headway. I've had a lot of experiences as a dog musher since then. You know, we've gone to Norway. We've had some, you know, good races. We've had some bad luck. We made some big mistakes, and all of those are things you learn from and grow with. And I think we had success in a lot of ways, too. So I think I'm a better competitor now than I was in 2017. I think I need, this is going to sound weird, I suppose, but I think on some levels I need the win less, if that makes sense. And this is something you probably see with a lot of these guys. You know, maybe this is why four is a hurdle for people to get over, is at some point when you're 25 and you don't think you can win the Iditarod, but you're just arrogant enough to say, damn it, I'm going to go win this thing. When you're 2 miles from the finish line, and you're like, holy crap, we actually did it. You know, I know I've been saying I thought we could, or knew we could, but when it's actually happened, like, it actually happened. This is incredible. And somewhere along the line, that you stop asking the question of if you can. You've already done it. You know you can. And maybe that's when you start looking at retirement when you're 50 or 60. And it's like, do I really need to prove to myself that I can handle this challenge again? Or should I find a challenge that I don't know if I can do? So there's that aspect where it really comes down to the drive, but I know myself, and put me in a fight and we'll put up a good show. So I don't think I'm going to be any less of a competitor in the moment, but I do think I have the ability to zoom out better than I used to and take that long view when I need to. And I think that's going to make me a better coach in this thing. I think we can handle adversity better than ever before. And I'm pretty dang sure that when it's time to focus on the next 10 seconds, I can do it as well as I ever could. And that's really the grit, the grind it out, the final stretch. I kind of like that portion of the race, just for me, because it's when you get to the where I don't know if I can do this. And this is the one moment we get to prove that, you know, we can do more than we thought we could. And it takes a lot to get to that point when you don't know if you can keep going. And that's literally once every year when we do it, is on the Iditarod in those final miles. And I think I'm going to be, I think I'm a better racer now than before, but maybe in a different way. We'll see. One big change, a little less lofty view, is the dogs that I'm working with. Every race before this, I was coming into the race with a team that I had raced with the year before, with dogs that I had, in many cases, won with the year before, right? This year, I've got one dog, probably on my team, that has won an Iditarod with me. Been on an Iditarod with me. I'm trying to remember if Gamble was with me in 16. Yeah, he was. The rest of them, I've raced them, I've mushed them, I've trained them. We've done a lot of stuff together, but I've never seen them at mile 800, 900, mile 1,000. So that's going to be really interesting on a more technical level that is different. I don't have, you know, my good old boys Reef and Tide and Maui and, you know, Loban and Steger and Barley. These were the war horses that were just amazing every year that helped me win Iditarod after Iditarod in there. And I had so much confidence in those guys because I knew how they would react when it was time to get up and leave White Mountain. They were soldiers. I don't know if these guys are the same or how they're each uniquely different. I know they're not the same in that they're all their own individual doggy, but they're the same genetics. They've been trained the same way, and I think they're actually better athletes, so we'll see.
Yeah, and when you were like, I know you were racing in Norway, but you mentioned taking a year off. Did you still have dogs? Like, dogs been?
Oh, yeah. I was still mushing. I trained a lot of what were two-year-olds then. Uh-huh. And I'll tell you what, that was some of the most fun mushing I've ever done. Like, just mushing to solely for the sake of training these young dogs. No pressure of having a race. No pressure to be ready at some given moment. That was some really fun mushing. So I was very active mushing last year, even though I wasn't racing. And I don't anticipate a day when I don't have some number of dogs.
Cool. Can we go meet some of the ones that might be on your team? Is like Reef still out here, or has he taken
he
a home life?
With Jen.
Oh, okay.
So he's she had some. I was gone doing a speaking thing somewhere, and he had some medical issues and ended up over at her place and just kind of stayed there.
Okay.
But Tide and Maui and Surf are still here. Shoot. And just about 2 weeks ago, Gott passed away, and he won with me the first year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was the last one that was on my winning team. And he was the three-legged dog. So, yeah. All right. Hi, dog. I guess we can start on this. Hey, Mr. Ace. This is Ace. He's one that came from my dad's kennel. and is a really phenomenal dog. He's not a leader, but he's dumb and he's happy and he's tough as nails and he's an athlete. He just goes and goes and goes. So there's a lot of these guys just like him that are super happy, playful, and this sums them up, you know? They're just joyous about life, and these are the dogs that I like being on the trail with, or dogs that enjoy being out there and enjoy mushing as much as I do. I don't feel like I'm asking them to do something tremendously difficult or hard in the final days of the race. It's like, I feel like I've got to get my ass moving because they're waiting for me. That's the type of dog that I enjoy running. And fortunately, these ones that came from my dad are mostly like that. A lot of the ones over here are some of the younger guys and whatnot. I can pick out a couple others over here to say hi to.
How old is Aith?
He is 4 now, I believe.
Did he run with your dad? Is he running Iditarod before?
Yeah, he ran the Iditarod last year with my dad. And actually, Ace, let me check your collar.
That was Alaska Public Media's Tegan Hanlon interviewing Dallas Seavey, the 4-time Iditarod champion. Back in the Iditarod after being away for a few years, that interview was in February in Talkeetna. I'm your host, Casey Grove. Stay tuned for another episode of the Idita Pod coming up.